From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright. Filling in for Jim Agudat, this is Idaho Matters. It's Wednesday. That means it's time for our Doctor Roundtable with Dr. David Pate. But before we get started today, I want to introduce some very special in-studio guests. Almost 2 years ago, a bunch of retirees, two doctors, a U.S. Treasury agent, a fighter pilot, and a plumber, formed a little quintet calling themselves the Midnight Jazz Cats. And they bring a little joy to senior living facilities and other spots around the valley. And now, along with their mascot, Ella Fitzkitty, they play jazz standards, bossa novas, western swing, all over the Treasure Valley. And they have invaded the studio today and have agreed to play some of their favorite tunes. And they're also going to tell us why they got together to promote jazz music. But first, they're going to play some songs. Hi, Jazz Cats. How are you today?
Hi.
Hi. Okay, let's get started with a little music. You're going to take it away with I Can't Give You Anything But Love. Take it away, Jazz Cats.
Ready?
I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of, baby. You dream a while, yeah, scheme a while. You're sure to find happiness. And I guess all the things you'd think are fine. Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets, Walmart won't just sell to your baby till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby. Well, I can't give you anything but love. Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets, Walmart just won't sell to your baby till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby. Well, I can't give you anything. I can't give you anything. Well, I can't give you anything but love.
Right. That was the Midnight Jazz Cats with the song I Can't Give You Anything But Love. We're going to hear more from the Jazz Cats later in the show and find out who they are and why they are here today. It's Wednesday. That means it's time for our Doctor Roundtable with Dr. David Pate, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Dr. Pate, how about those Jazz Cats?
Bravo. That was awesome. They are so good.
Oh, they were great, weren't they? That was fantastic.
Loved it.
All right. Well, let's get down to the round table. And I understand avian influenza is still continuing to plague us. What's the latest?
Yeah, that's actually what's concerning is that this has not been nipped in the bud. I hope we've learned. I fear we haven't from our COVID pandemic. That it's best not to just allow viruses to transmit to growing numbers of mammals, and especially the risk to humans. And yet that is exactly what this virus is doing. So we noticed in March that we were starting to have dairy cow outbreaks of avian influenza. We knew the virus was capable of infecting cows, but we had never seen it happen naturally. And now here we are in the United States having progressively, every week they announce new outbreaks of dairy farms in a growing number of states. This is very concerning. Then we added to that that recently we detected avian influenza outbreaks in alpacas in Idaho. And so that is of concern, because it had been the thought that maybe this virus was transmitting on the cow milking equipment, because there's very high levels of virus in the cow milk and of those that are infected. But that would not explain this transmitting from the cows to alpacas. We've also seen it going back from cows to poultry. And now cases of it transmitting to cats, including, that's been documented now in Idaho. And probably getting very little notice in the media, but of pretty significant concern, is that it's being detected in house mice. And the reason that all of this is of concern is because there is a belief that many of the wild animals that are carnivores are picking this up from eating diseased or dead birds that were infected. Now we have added to the growing number of predators that eat mice, and if they can be infected, we may be transmitting that way. But the concern is this is spreading to more and more animals and different species. And then when it does so, that always giving it the opportunity to develop new, what we call reassortments, where they swap genetic material or mutations, where it may now become more efficient at being able to be transmitted to humans. So far, it is not efficient at transmitting to humans, but it's of concern because from early on, and this we've known about this particular avian virus since 1996, but in people that did get infected, the mortality rate was about 52%. One piece of good news potentially is we have noticed less severe cases since the 2009 pandemic flu. And the reason that might be that we're encouraged about is while this avian virus is an H5N1, which are the two major proteins that trigger the immune response and that we can identify the viruses by, the pandemic virus in 2009 was an H1N1. So completely different virus, but both of these viruses share that N1 protein. And it's some hope that maybe people that have been around since then that were exposed to that might have some cross protection, because if we look at cases since 2009, the mortality rate in those folks has been about 42%, so less than before. So it's something, though, that we have to take very serious. I fear that we're not doing enough and that we're watching rarely seeing all the events leading up to what could become a future pandemic.
I'm going to back you up there for a minute, because when you said cats, I think everybody who has a cat perked up and went, huh? Do we know much about that? I mean, not everybody has an alpaca in their house, but a lot of people have cats in their house, and they're going to perk up and go, are my cats safe? Do I need to worry? How much do we know about that, especially as we're spreading into more species that are closer and closer to home, so to speak?
Right. Well, we don't know enough about this, but what we do know from the limited number of reports of infected cats, and I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but I think we're approaching a dozen now. Mm. First of all, it causes very severe disease in these cats. They show significant neurologic injury, and then many times they die. However, on the good side, most of the cats that have been identified had a link to these farms. And what is thought is happening, although I emphasize the word thought because we don't know, is that when there's a dairy farm and then the cows are infected, as I said, there's very high levels of virus in the milk, and there is some concern that these cats are being fed this unpasteurized milk from the cows. That's one possibility, or that they're actually scavenging the spilt milk from the milking process and getting it that way. Though, again, I emphasize we don't know, but I think the fact that most of these cats have had some kind of a tie to a farm suggests that they're getting it through that exposure to the cows rather than through mice or other things. But this is a growing threat, and we're going to have to watch it closely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's switch over to the RSV vaccine. We've got some good news there for folks who are 50 to 59, I understand.
Yeah. So last year was the first year we had a very effective RSV vaccines, and that proved out to be the case. They were very effective at preventing severe illness and hospitalization. We worry about RSV during the winter months. It's a virus that is very infectious. It causes problems mostly in very young infants and in the elderly. And so last year it was approved for adults over the age 60, but now the FDA has just expanded that authorization to those in the age group of 50 to 59. The younger, as long as you're not an infant, young people, healthy adults, they typically have fairly mild illness. But once you get past that 50 number, we do see growing numbers of people that can get severely ill with RSV. And if you look at those 50 to 59, it accounts for about 42,000 hospitalizations a year. So wow, it's not insignificant. Now it gives them the option if they want to protect themselves, particularly those in that age group that are around young children, school teachers, daycare workers, that kind of thing. This might be something they want to consider when it comes time to get vaccinated.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to have more with our Dr. Roundtable in just a minute. And don't forget, we have the Midnight Jazz Cats, the jazz band in studio with us today. You guys want to play a little song into the break? How about Ain't Misbehavin'?
Talk to, I'm by myself. No one to walk with, I'm happy on my shelf. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you. Yeah, I'm done with flirting, you're the one I love. I'm for certain, it's you that I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you. Like Jack Horner in his corner, I'm going nowhere, but what do I care? 'Cause your kisses, they're worth waiting for. Yeah, believe me, baby, I don't stay out late, there's nowhere to go. I'm home about 8, just me and my radio. I'm misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you.
It's Idaho Matters. We're continuing our Dr. Roundtable with Dr. David Pate. And don't forget, we've got the Midnight Jazz Cats band here with us live in studio. They're going to be playing more music throughout the show, so stay tuned. Dr. Pate, we have, correct me if I'm wrong, what appears to be the very beginning of a new COVID-19 surge.
That's true. We've seen this creating havoc in a number of Eastern, well, a number of European and Asian countries. But now we're seeing an uptick in this new variant that is particularly affecting the West Coast. We saw it pop up in California. Washington is the most recent state to be having an uptick. And so those people that may have been last received their shot or had gotten infected at the beginning of this year, that infection at the beginning of the year was almost certainly JN.1. We're now past that to a new set of variants called the FLIRT variants, which did not cause much of a problem in the United States as opposed to a number of other countries. But now we're on to another variant, the so-called fluke ones, a particular KP.3. And that's what's taking off now. The thing that is concerning is that this virus continues to develop ways to get around that existing immunity, not completely, but enough that it can still cause infections, even if you were vaccinated previously or were infected previously. But those prior vaccinations, we have a study showing that even though they have not kept up as fast as the change to the actual variants, that if you're keeping up, for especially for the older folks, that if you're keeping up with those shots, it is broadening your antibody response. You're getting more extra protection, and that's going to help people from at least getting seriously ill or ending up in the hospital, even if it won't give significant protection from getting infected. So we still need to use our precautions. We're at that point in time where a lot of people are going to be traveling for vacations. Just had a study that if you're traveling internationally or on a flight that's more than 6 hours in duration, your risk for COVID transmission on the plane goes up 25-fold with that length of an air flight. So think about your precautions, and particularly if you're traveling somewhere, think about what you would do if you did get sick, where you would access healthcare to wherever you're going.
Wow. That's a little startling. And Moderna has a new combo flu COVID vaccine, or is going to?
Yes, they have just announced their phase 3. That's the last phase of clinical studies to determine its efficacy. They announced that those results met the targets that they set out for. So we may see the FDA give approval for this combination vaccine. And the benefit to the combination influenza and COVID is that there are many people out there that are afraid of needles. Now it's one shot instead of two. The other thing is it may make it more convenient for people that aren't very good about going in to the doctor or to a health center to get their vaccinations. So this is a good advantage for people like me that don't mind needles and don't mind getting the vaccines. I'm still going to get them separated because I like to time mine. But for those that, if they don't have that convenience, they're not going to get it. This is going to be great.
Wow. Okay. Dr. Pate, as always, it's good information. And I think there's more information coming out, especially about the avian influenza. We're going to keep up on that. Dr. David Pate is a former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Dr. Pate, thanks as always for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And today we're featuring some very special in-studio guests. The Midnight Jazz Cats are here to tell us their story and to play some music. You guys want to play us into another break? How about The Girl from Ipanema? Thank you. Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.